Wine and Cheese presents the Uncorked Podcast. Sinead Johnson is the founder of Wife Diaries LLC, a Facebook community exclusively for wives to feel comfortable discussing the trials and triumphs of marriage while lending and receiving advice on all related topics. She founded the organization in July 2011, and now, with over 20,000 wives, Wife Diaries has ballooned into a movement where wives are sharing diary entries on everything from recipes, pregnancy and infidelity, to beauty trends, fitness, children, and more. They also meet locally through Wives Night Out events. In this episode, I sit down with the happily married, busy mother of three to pop the cork on the magic and myths of marriage.
I've known you since we were so young, growing up in church together. But for those listeners who aren't familiar with you, tell us a bit about who you are and how you define yourself.
Okay. So I'm Sinead Johnson. I've been married to my husband. It'll be 9 years in May. We have three children together. We met at church at about 10, 11 years old. I have an organization called Wife Diaries. It's an organization where us wives just discuss the trials and triumphs of marriage. There's over 20,000 members within the organization. And I work as a higher education professional. And I'm just happy to, you know, sip wine with Natalie.
So in 2011, you founded Wife Diaries. And it started as a Facebook group. That you just mentioned has more than 20,000 members, which is amazing.
Right.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell us what caused you to start this online community and how it's grown so much over the last, 7 years?
Okay. So I started it as a stay-at-home mom. I was in grad school at the time, and I really didn't have that much adult interaction. So I was just sitting on the bed with my baby. She was a newborn at the time. And I just said, let me start this group on Facebook. And I took about 20 wives off of my friends list and added them to the group. And the group just like kind of ballooned from there. And we've all developed sisterhoods within, you know, the group as a whole and in different regions where we are. I know the Philly wives are like a really big region, and a lot of the Philly wives connect often, as well as the St. Louis wives and wives just all over in the different regions where we're represented. But basically, I started it because I didn't have anyone in my life or in my age group who I could talk to about marriage, because I kind of was just winging it, which is okay. I think it's okay to wing it if you don't really know. But I also wanted to have people outside of like my immediate circle, like my mom or, you know, my aunts or anybody who I could just talk to as well, because sometimes it's kind of hard for us to talk to family about like the true.
Right.
And it, for some reason, just seemed easier to talk to strangers about like what was really going on. So I think that that's why I started it, just to have that interaction with other wives and to gain more insight into this thing called marriage.
It's funny that you say that. So in our last episode of the podcast, we spoke with a therapist, and I was sharing with her that what we found over the years through Wine and Cheese is that the women bond so well because during their first gathering, they go really deep and they're sharing very personal, issues with one another. And for the most part, they're virtually strangers.
Right.
And how there's some sort of comfort in being able to confide in someone who isn't too close to you, that they might judge you or so tell me some, and I know you don't, I don't want you to go into personal details, but kind of like, what are the things that are discussed within the Facebook group?
Oh, all types of things. We talk about infidelity, faith and religion. We talk about if your husband is of a different faith than, you know, the wife is, if those conversations haven't been had on how to raise children. Mm-hmm. We talk about blended families and like the highs and lows that come with that. We talk about, you know, second marriages and how to interact and co-parent with, you know, your first spouse or what have you. Pregnancy, that's a big topic as well, because we talk about infertility and, you know, pregnancy, and just try to celebrate each other through the process and support those who are having difficulties with fertility. We just really much cover all bases of us as women, and also, you know, as marriage as a whole, mm-hmm. because there's so many different layers that come with being married and being a woman as well. So no topic is off limits, really. Like, anything that you want to talk about, if you want to talk about shopping or something, or you want to talk about reality TV or how Beyonce just slayed Coachella, we could talk about that. Totally, yes. We could talk about that, but we also talk about, you know, the dark side of marriage too. Like, mm-hmm. everybody, I don't want to put it out there and make it seem like everybody experiences this really dark side of marriage, because that's not everyone's truth, but some, for some wives it is. So we do go deep into those issues, and we talk about security and being secure as a woman, or if you have some insecurities, and just try to help each other get through that. That's type
awesome.
Of thing. Yeah,
that's awesome. So I have heard the saying, and, you know, I hear a lot of things as a single woman. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I've heard is God, spouse, children, mm-hmm. in that order. Mm-hmm. You are a mother of three. Mm-hmm. You had all of your children before the age of 30, which I'm just like amazed by. But how likely is it to always put each other before the kids?
So this is like a touchy subject, because we talk about this a lot too in Wife Diaries. And for me, when I cook, for example, everybody knows that I love to cook.
Yes. Oh my gosh. If you follow Shanae on Instagram, I get hungry looking at your posts, but go ahead. She throws down, y'all.
Thank you. But when I cook, I do make my husband's plate first. And that's not because, like, I feel like he's like above the rest of us and we have to eat from the scraps. But I do give my husband his plate first, and then, you know, I make the kids' plates, and we all sit down, we pray together, we eat dinner. It's not like we're sitting there waiting for him to finish and tell us when we can eat. But like, when you asked the question, that's like the first thing that came to my mind when you said, like, God first, spouse, and then your children. Because in that way, I guess it's like kind of old school traditional, where you will make your husband's plate, or if the wife is in the kitchen, the one who's like solely cooking. That's me. I'm traditional in that way. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like God is always going to be first. Like, there's no, like, you know, that spot is filled. Mm-hmm. Okay. Spouse and then children, I feel like with me, it's not that I feel my husband is above my children. Like, if it was like a tragedy or something, like, I would just save my husband and not save my children, because I'm saving my children first. I'm just be honest. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we are all a team. So I think it's like God first and then family. I don't feel like it's God, spouse, children. I feel like it's more God and then family, and my family is my husband and my children. Mm-hmm. So if I'm thinking of it in that context, then I am like making sure that I give my all to both of them. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give my all to my husband and then like my kids get the scraps of me, and I don't want to give my all to my children and then my husband gets the scraps of me.
Right.
You know, so right. I kind of think like, yeah, God first and then family.
I think that I liked your analogy of serving him first, serving him dinner, mm-hmm. first, or making his plate first, mm-hmm. because it's almost like your family is your team, mm-hmm. right? And you and your husband are the coaches of the team.
Right.
And the coaches have to be working from the same strategy, the same game plan, mm-hmm. in order to coach the kids, mm-hmm. right? So it makes sense that you would make sure that he's fed first,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, just make sure that you give him some attention or whatever the case may be,
mm-hmm.
Because from that partnership,
mm-hmm.
flows into the relationship that you all have with your children.
Right. Right. And I want my children to see a strong bond between me and him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm like really adamant about us all coming together as a family and sitting down at the table for dinner. Like, we sit down at the table, we unplug, no phones are allowed at our dinner table, mm-hmm. and we talk about our day. And that's our time for us to interact, because we could kind of get lost in everything if, you know, the kids are eating at this time and then he's eating at this time and then I'm on the couch watching Real Housewives or something. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to get lost in that kind of thing. So we always make sure that we stop, we make the plates, we sit down at the table and we talk about, you know, our days and get to have interaction with one another without any phones or social media or anything mm-hmm. being involved.
Do you and your husband do like date nights occasionally? Yeah. How regularly do you all have one-on-one time?
So we do one-on-one time a lot. I actually did a video blog about date night, and he was like, oh, I don't believe in date night. I mean, we can do it once in a blue moon, but I don't think that needs to be planned, blah, blah, blah. But we do date night all the time. We are very fortunate and blessed to have a strong support system that, you know, our parents can care for our children so that we can have that time to get out together. So I think about maybe 2 to 3 times a month, we do have a time where we are together, and it might be date night in the house. It doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean that we have to go outside. I could do a candlelight dinner in the house in the dining room and it'll be fine. But most of the times it is, you know, outside. But sometimes you just don't have to go outside. I'm just going to be honest.
Right,
so
right.
You just make it do what it do in the house. We just make sure that we keep our friendship up, because I feel like, and this is something that me and Scott talk about all the time, we're friends first.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And that's really important to us. So even when I'm mad at my husband, I still want to talk to my friend. And
oh, I love
yeah,
that.
That's
so sweet.
That's kind of how our relationship works. So we try to make sure that we have that time with each other, because we don't want to lose that.
I love that friendship is the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I feel like even in dating,
mm-hmm.
we kind of skip that step, because we're just so eager to be in a relationship with somebody and to be committed in a relationship in a romantic way,
mm-hmm.
that we skip over the friendship part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, when you think about marriage, this is like for the long haul, right?
Yes, child.
The looks are going to fade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be limitations that take place, you know, for whatever reason. At the core, at the foundation, there
right.
needs to be a friendship,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, that's something that can be sustained over time.
Right.
In addition to, you know, the 2 to 3 times a month that you do your date night,
mm-hmm.
what are some other ways that you ensure your marriage is healthy and happy?
We make sure that we check up on each other. So if that means sending a like Google Messenger message to each other during the workday, just to, you know, a message of encouragement or asking how your day is and that type of thing. We make sure that we do that. We also make sure that we always, our pastor talks about this all the time, make sure that we watch the 10 o'clock show together. So the 10 o'clock show is like, you know, your Law and Orders or your Chicago PD and that type of thing. And that's our thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we make sure that we're, you know, together watching that show together. And it might sound silly, but a lot of times you get really busy with your career and your life and taking the kids here, there, and everywhere to their extracurricular activities and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, because your kids are really active.
Right. So you don't get, you know, the time, or you're exhausted by the time you get home to spend that time with your spouse. But we try to make sure that we do something together. So the 10 o'clock show is our thing, was one of our things.
Mm-hmm.
Also sitting down as a family, eating dinner together, that's another one of our things. And making sure that we check on each other throughout the day. Like, even if he sends me a Google message, you know, at 10 o'clock and I'm in a meeting or something, I make sure that I respond at 10:30 when I get back to my office, because I just want to, you know, check in and let him know that I'm cool, and I want to make sure that he's okay too. Because sometimes if you are a working parent, like working outside of the home, even if you work inside the home, days can be stressful. Mm-hmm. So you want to be that relief for your spouse.
Sure.
And you want them to feel like they have something or someone who has their back and who they can come home to and depend on, or just be able to talk to throughout the day and have that support system. So that's what we try to do for each other.
So we've talked about the time, attention, and energy that you put into your children,
mm-hmm.
and that you put into your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you make yourself a priority? Of course, while still being physically and emotionally present as a wife and a mother.
Mm-hmm. So that's a tough one, because you can really lose yourself in this whole thing. And I've been there where I've lost myself. I feel like I just got myself back. You know, mm-hmm. I'm really in a good place. For me as a woman, because I feel like I was just giving to my kids, to my husband, and I got literally like sick, like physically sick,
mm-hmm.
because I was doing so much for everyone else and I was taking care of everyone else, but I forgot to take care of myself. So you have to make sure that you have that thing that you love to do, or that self-care thing that you need to do for yourself, just so that you keep your sanity and you can, you know, keep yourself whole as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was just talking to my daughter about this not too long ago. I used to read a lot, and I like to turn the pages of the book. I like to feel the pages.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to be my thing. So every night when I would get home after dinner and all that, I would go in my bed. I would have my lamp on and I would read my book. And I used to get so excited when I would finish my book within like 3 days or a week or whatever. And I kind of lost that. Like, I got to a point where I couldn't tell you the last book that I read because it was so long ago. But mm-hmm. that was my thing for years. That was me still feeling like me, not losing myself, not being too exhausted, not to have time for me. And like, for everyone else, I don't know, like, whatever your thing is your thing, but for reading was my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of lost that, and then I kind of just lost working out. I gained like 20 pounds because I just wasn't working out. I was just focused on the kids and my husband, and then I just kind of lost myself. Mm-hmm. And I had to take a moment, breathe, and look myself in the mirror and just say, you know, Shanae, get it together. And that's what I did. And it wasn't like an overnight thing.
Sure.
Have to make sure that you make yourself a priority. And it's kind of hard to make yourself a priority when you have so many different responsibilities with your career and with your husband and with your children. And it's easy to get consumed with taking the kids here and there, making sure that they're okay, and making sure that you have your dinner prepared and all that, and making sure that your husband feels like a man. It's like really, it could be really consuming when you're taking care of everybody else, but you want to make sure that you just take a step back and breathe and do something that you need to do for yourself. So whether that's reading, or, you know, practicing on how to put your eyebrows on the right way, it's, you know, do something that's rewarding for you. And that's what I just started to do. I just started to get back into reading and makeup and different things that make me feel pretty and make me feel like Shanae. Because it might be something small, like, you know, the best eyebrow technique. But for me, that's huge, because that's something that I'm working on for myself.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I subscribe to the Shine texts mm-hmm. that come every day, and it linked to an article, and some of my girlfriends in my Wine and Cheese branch know that I struggle with meditating. Mm-hmm. When I try to meditate, my mind just goes in 50 million different directions, mm-hmm. and I was having trouble just being still in my thoughts. And this article from a Shine text talked about how non-meditating people can meditate
mm-hmm.
by just getting in a flow of something. So if reading is a way for you to just past time and you kind of just get lost in it. In some way, that's a meditative state, right? Mm-hmm. If doing your makeup or watching a bunch of YouTube videos and just getting lost in that, because we all know how you can get trapped down the YouTube rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. But it kind of allows your mind to just go on autopilot. You don't have to do serious concentration, but it offers some peace and some calmness. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily have to be you doing yoga and meditating or... Mm-hmm. You know, you being still and silent and listening to music or something, but something that works for you. Mm-hmm. I feel like, especially with social media, we are starting to see this resurgence of proposals and marriages. And it's not a bad thing. I'm an advocate of healthy relationships in any form. Mm-hmm. But why do you think all of a sudden it's like, it's almost like people are doing proposals now and weddings now so that they go viral. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I kind of feel the same way. And we spoke earlier. And when I got married and when I had my children, it was like pre-Pinterest. So I feel like I kind of missed out on like the whole gender reveal and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like if I were to get married to my husband all over again, it probably would be a little different because, you know, there's so many different innovative ways that you can do things. But I do feel like, I mean, maybe in some regard, these proposals and marriages are for all for likes or all for like going viral. But then two, these proposals and marriages have been like going on like this pre social media, you know? So I think that it's because everyone sees it now that it just makes it more glamorized and that kind of thing. But I think that all this stuff has been going on, you know, before all of this. I mean, my proposal was kind of whack, but you know, we're here now, about to be 9 years in, so it's neither here nor there.
Tell us about your proposal. Now you have to tell
us. Oh my God. So the short story is, so I was still a student at Delaware State University. Go Hornets, that's my HBCU, okay. So I had just graduated, matter of fact, from DSU. 2 days prior to my proposal, my daughter was about a week shy of her first birthday. I was moving out of my apartment with my then boyfriend, and he had left for the day, and I just wanted to hold my baby for the whole day because, again, I was in college. I really didn't get to spend a lot of time with her during the first year of her life. So I was holding her all day. I wasn't really packing or doing anything. So he left for the day, he came back, and nothing was packed up. And he said, you know what, Shanae, you're supposed to pack, and we have to get out of here, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So he left out, he was pissed. And he came back with Boston Market. Boston Market is like my favorite thing. I'm a little bougie, but not that bougie that I don't like Boston Market. And I was eating, and he was like, you know, Shanae, and I was mad at you, but all I kept on thinking about is that you didn't eat anything all day. You just stayed in here and held the baby. So I got you some Boston Market, your favorite. And since I got you your favorite, I just wanted to let you know that I really want you in my life. And then he got there on one knee amongst all these boxes. And he's like, you know, will you marry me? And I'm like, what? This is not how this goes. And he pulled out a ring and it was real. And I was what is this? Like, are you really proposing to me right now? Because my graduation was like 2 days prior.
Right.
So you would think that you would propose to me with my dad and my mom and everybody, you know, around. So I could be that girl like, oh my God, you know, I wanted to cry and all that stuff. But he didn't do that. He proposes to me amongst the boxes. My hair was tied up. I looked a hot mess. It wasn't like a photo moment. There was no Instagram. Facebook had just came out like a year prior. So people weren't posting like their lives like that. Like, of course, I posted on Facebook that I got engaged, but it wasn't like a, like how you see now, like instant, you know. So I was just like, okay, you know, I guess I'll marry you because I like you.
Oh, gosh.
And
Let's pause because, listeners, I need you to know that Shanae is pretending. She doesn't just like Scott, okay? We all grew up together.
I like him.
She loved Scott, and she loves Scott now.
I love him. I loved him since the moment that we were at your, what was it, your 14th birthday 13th party? 13th birthday, birthday party. And I told him that I liked him, and he told me that he liked me. And that was like, the rest is history. But yeah, I loved him, and I knew I was going to like marry him, but I just didn't, in my mind, that wasn't the ideal that I had for my proposal story.
So in the theme of magic or myth, mm-hmm. it's a myth that you have to have a magical proposal mm-hmm. in order to have this wonderful, long-lasting marriage.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If Scott would have asked me to marry him in the car, like driving to Dell State or something, I would have said yeah. And we still would have been sitting here about to approach 9 years of marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, our first date, like real date in my mind, was his junior prom. And that was in 2001. Here we are, 2018, you know? So I still would have said yeah, regardless.
In the last 9 years, mm-hmm. And from launching Wife Diaries mm-hmm. 7 years ago, what are some myths about marriage that were revealed to you?
Like that marriage was like easy because I guess in my mind, and we watch movies and, you know, we see people in our lives who are married, but we don't really know the true because we're not really inside of their household or anything like that. I kind of thought that marriage would be just simple. I mean, to me, like we already had a kid. We were already together for a million years. It really didn't make that big of a difference, you know, mm-hmm. us being married. But then again, we got married young. I was 24 when I got married, and we grew up. Like, we started our careers. We, you know, finished schooling and all that kind of stuff. And it, like, sometimes things do get rough. And when you hear people, well, prior to getting married, we would hear people say, like, you know, sometimes you have to iron out issues and that kind of thing. That's something my grandpa used to tell me when I was younger, like, we would have to iron things out. I never really understood what that meant. Mm-hmm. But when you're in it, some issues you do have to iron out. So some things that you say that you would never tolerate, and I'm not talking about, like, you know, any abuse or infidelity right. or that type of thing. I'm just talking about, like, just things that you just don't think about mm-hmm. Happening, or things that you would say, oh, I would just never, I could never. Sometimes you do have to work through those things, and that's really real. And I feel like it's a learning experience, and you have to be really connected with the person that you're with to work through a marriage, because certain things can easily just break you and make you just separate and not even want to have to deal anything with your spouse. But I think that if you're both equally yoked and you're on one accord, you can work through those hard things, because there are a lot of hard conversations. There are a lot of things that come up. Like, nobody thinks about like a layoff or, mm-hmm. you know, any financial difficulties due to whatever. Nobody thinks about any of that. Right. But when you're in it, you have to figure out a way to iron it out, mm-hmm. as my grandfather would say. Mm-hmm. So
you have to be best friends with your spouse. Mm-hmm. Is that magic or myth?
That's a tough one. I think it's a little both, because a lot of women aren't best friends with their spouses, and that's okay for them. Mm-hmm. For me, Scott is my best friend. But that, again, our story is kind of untraditional. Like, we grew up together. We known each other for a long time. Our families know each other. We grew up together. We really didn't have a choice but to be friends. But for some women, they aren't best friends with their spouse. And they may see their spouse as a friend, obviously, but not the one they would tell everything to. But I could just speak for my truth, and that I talked to Scott about a lot of different things, and I feel like our conversations, if you were in the room when we would have our conversations, like a lot of people would be like, wow, they talk like that to each other, or they share that type of thing with each other, because it's nothing is really held back, to mm-hmm. be honest. Mm-hmm. We talk to each other. We're really good friends first. And if you hear our conversations, you might hear it as like two friends talking and not two like married people, mm-hmm. like a husband and a wife talking to each other. But I can't say that it's a myth, and I can't say that, well, it's obviously magic, but it's not like, you know, it just depends on a certain situation, because for certain people, being the best friend with your spouse works, and for certain people it doesn't. So
yeah, I have a good girlfriend. They're approaching 10 years of marriage, and like you all, they were high mm-hmm. school sweethearts. Mm-hmm. Their families have known each other since forever. Mm-hmm. But she does not consider her husband her best friend. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was different, because mm-hmm. you always hear or see people refer to their spouse as their best friend. And sometimes maybe people go into it with that expectation that they will be best friends. And when that expectation isn't met, they feel like something is wrong in the marriage. Mm-hmm. Magic or myth? You and your husband's relationship with people of the opposite sex, is mm-hmm. it possible or not?
Very possible. Very possible. One of my closest friends is a guy, and he is we all grew up together. Again, mm-hmm. we went to college together and that type of thing. I can call him and like joke about anything. Or if, for example, something really, really bad happened when I was at work one time, and my husband was away on business, and he sent my friend to come and get me. Like, in theory, if you look at TV and stuff, they're like, oh, you never send a guy to go get your wife, you know, something's going to happen, whatever. But no, it was just that, like, he came and got me. He came and, you know, stood in a gap where, like, Scott couldn't get to me fast enough because he was miles and miles away.
Right.
That's a friend. My friend is, I can talk about him all day, because he's really, like, just a genuine friend of mine. Same with Scott. You're a friend of Scott's. Mm-hmm. Y'all, you know, you and him talk, and that's fine with me. It's not like people, I think that because of TV or like insecurities, people think that, you know, you can't have any friends of the opposite sex, which is so weird to me, because we've always grew up in this group of friends that were like Khadijah and Kyle and Overton and Maxine, and you know, that was our group of friends.
Right.
So you can have friends that are of the opposite sex that you just don't have any like sexual attraction to. You're just genuinely friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fine. It works for us. Scott has his friends, like, you know, his female friends. I have mine, and we have a lot collectively.
Mm-hmm. What about the male friends that Scott isn't as familiar with, or the female friends that he isn't as familiar, or that you're not as familiar with of his? Does that make a difference at all?
I think it's all about trust. Like, I have a coworker from my previous position who I'm really close with, like, you know, I really talk to, and Scott knows that we would go to lunch together and everything, and Scott, you know, was fine with it. He still is fine with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's met the coworker before, but it's not like a thing. Like, some people, so that's another thing that we talk about in Wife Diaries, like going to lunch with your coworkers of the opposite sex and that kind of thing. You don't necessarily have to be attracted to somebody because you go to lunch with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This coworker in particular, we went to lunch together a lot, and we developed a friendship. And to this day, this has been going on for about 4 years. We are still really like genuinely friends. He's not as close with Scott as I am,
mm-hmm.
but he totally respects Scott. He totally respects my marriage. Same with Scott and his, you know, coworkers or female friends that he may meet along the way. It doesn't necessarily mean that he has like a sexual attraction to them. It just means that he made a friend. I just feel like we put so much pressure on everybody, like, oh, don't talk to her because, you know, you're married and that kind of thing. But nobody's out here. I mean, some people are. But I'm not out here trying to find a friend, you know, to cheat on my husband with. Like, if you're cool, then you're cool. Like, yeah, right. We could kick it. We could, you know, go out for lunch or something. But it's not really that deep to me. I feel like the woman that Scott is friends with, who I may not be really close with, I think they really respect our marriage. And if they don't, he will just, you know, cut them. Because I don't think that he would have someone in his space who doesn't respect me as his wife, mm-hmm. because I'm his friend first too. Right. And I wouldn't do that to him as well.
Right. Is this magic or myth that married people should, once they're married, no longer have single friends? So you shouldn't have single female friends and Scott shouldn't have single male friends. I've heard that a lot. So I just want to get your take on it.
My single friends are the reason why I haven't cut Scott sometimes, or like, you know, they really saved his life. You do not cut off your friends because you are married. That is just the dumbest thing that I have ever heard of. And I just don't understand the logic.
Why,
I don't
why understand. Is it dumb?
It's dumb because it gives the, like, it's like a connotation that you're single friends because you're married. You can no longer hang with your single friends because they do single things, and because they do single things, you're going to do single things. For you to cut off these friendships that you had for so long because you're a wife doesn't make any sense to me. Because the relationships that you have with your girlfriends are needed. Mm-hmm. A lot of wives don't have any friends because they chose to cut off all their single girlfriends. And all they have is their husbands, where they don't have that relationship with their husbands that they can talk to them. And women need interaction with other women. Like, you need someone else to depend on. So even with my single friends, if I'm having an issue in my marriage or an issue with me as a woman, I still feel like I could call my single girlfriends because they know me.
Right.
It's not, you know, I don't think in my head like, oh, they're single, they won't understand. I think in my head, like, this is my sister. Let me call her because I'm going through something. Or in a lot of occasions, my single friends will call me because they feel like something is going on with me. And they'll call me to check on me. And that really helps me as a woman to have that support with them. Mm-hmm. So that's a myth.
Okay.
Back to your question. That's a myth. You do not have to only have married friends because you are married. No, absolutely not.
And it might be nice to just hear a single person's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, share advice to them from a married perspective.
Absolutely. Like, you never know. Like, you don't want to block your blessing. And I told this, I had posted something in Wife Diaries not too long ago. Because I was having a horrible day. A really horrible day. Me and Scott were at odds. I was just at odds, like, personally within myself. And one of my single girlfriends, she just happens to be single. She's my friend. But I don't like to say single girlfriends. Mm-hmm. But she texted me and I responded. My response was really short. And it wasn't towards her. It was just me dealing with what I was dealing with.
Right.
And in that moment, she called me right away. And when she called me, I picked up the phone and she said, "Shanae, what's going on?" And I started bawling. I was crying and everything. And she just listened. And she, like, really kind of ministered to me. Mm-hmm. Like, she was really helpful for me in that moment. And had I cut her off because she was single, quote unquote, I would have, you know, missed out on that opportunity to get, you know, comfort in my moment.
Right.
And I feel like that's so important. You bring these people into your life and you are blessed to have these friends and these people who really care about you in your life. You don't want to cut people off because
of their relationship status.
Yeah, of their relationship status. You don't want to do
right.
that. Yeah.
Somebody who may have, you know, the advice or the support in career, mm-hmm. or in ministry or all these other facets of life,
mm-hmm.
but you've cut them off because they don't share the same relationship status right. as you.
And that's why I said it was dumb.
Got it. But what I like about what you said is you know, even back to, you know, having friends of the opposite sex, it boils down to trust.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So if you're choosing friends that you know respect you and your marriage, then their status should be irrelevant.
Right.
Cool. So we can still be friends. Yeah. Like I was going anywhere anyway. So as we wrap up, if you knew then what you know now about marriage, would you do anything differently? And if so, what?
Wow. I don't think that I would do anything differently. Because it's so, like, unpredictable. Like, you never know how you're going to react to certain things. And marriage is very hard. It's a lot of hard work. We have our up days. We have our down days. Way more ups than downs. But you have to be in a place. And I think that comes with maturity, too. Because I got married at 24. So, at 24, if you would have asked me this question, if I knew, like, everything that was going to happen, I might have said something different. But I think with maturity, you start to understand a little bit more the other person's perspective, and you can respect opinions differently. You can not be so confrontational. You can sit back and listen to listen and not listen to speak. I feel like if I knew back then what we were going to go through or encounter, I still would have said I do. Because I really love my husband. I like him. And I feel like everything that we've been through, and it has not always been like, you know, rainbows. Mm-hmm. But I feel like everything that we've been through, we have done a good job of overcoming and working together to overcome.
That's good.
Yeah.
Marriage is hard work, and there's good days, but there's also bad days. How do you and your husband, what are some strategies that you put in place to ensure that you bounce back from the bad days?
So this might sound cheesy, but I mean, it is what it is. Call it what you want.
If it works, it works.
Yeah, it works. me and my husband, we just went through a tough storm, and even through that storm, with like days that like if I notice him not doing well that day, I just grab his hand and I just pray with him. And it may sound like, you know, oh, well, that's like a simple answer, but it really works. I grab his hand and I pray with him. Same with me. He'll lay hands on me. He'll pray with me. He'll ask me how my day is and all that. He will hold me. And that's what I do with him. Like, I just try to make sure that I cover him, even when he doesn't want to pray. Because, I mean, sometimes you just in your feelings and you just don't even want to pray. You don't want to do the whole thing. But you just go with it. So I just grab him, or I just lay my hand on him, and I just pray over him. Because I understand that it's hard out here to be a man and a husband and a provider and all the things that he is. And he understands it's hard for me to be a woman and a wife and a mother and all the things that I am. So we try to just make sure that we stop and pray for each other. And if we're both at odds, we try not to let that go on for days and days and days. Because it's when you allow stuff to fester like that and to go on for days and days and days, it makes the problem worse when you really just need to talk it out. And that doesn't mean that it's going to go away overnight. You still may have the sting of whatever the issue is. But you have to want to work through it. And you have to know that that's what the end goal is going to be. So it's not going to do you any justice if you're going to have the silent treatment or whatever for days and days and days when you know that you really just want to work through it. Mm-hmm. Just get it over with. Tackle it. Doesn't mean you have to feel better tomorrow. Doesn't mean you have to feel better the next week. But work towards the end goal of getting out of it and growing from it. Because you don't want to get stuck in that place. You will be very miserable. Take it from me. I've been there. Mm-hmm. You will be miserable just letting that thing fester and not talking to your spouse and not talking, like just being nasty and saying things that you know you shouldn't have said because you know that you just want to be with this person.
Right.
But you have to just stop, breathe, pray about it. And even if you don't feel like praying, call up a sister friend. Call up, you know, somebody that you could confide in. Read a scripture. Read a praying wife or like a book or something. Whatever is going to help you. For me, I'm not going to go in front. Like when I was mad at my husband, I was listening to resentment and all these like breakup songs or broken hearted songs, all this stuff that make me keep staying in my feelings.
Right.
But then I was like, Shanae, get yourself together and come up out of that. So I just, you know, had to, like a light bulb and a switch just went off. Like, Shanae, just come up out of that and don't do that because you have a good husband. Don't try to make it seem like your problem or your issue is worse than what it is. Like, you don't have to be sitting here singing resentment like you've been through what she talking about, you know? You have to just kind of condition yourself and make sure that you are mindful of what your end goal is going to be, and that's working through the problem because you don't want that thing to fester into something bigger.
I went to a bridal shower once, mm-hmm. and they always ask the guests to give marriage advice. Mm-hmm. And someone advised the bride-to-be not to go to bed angry.
That's a lie.
I was just going to ask, marriage or magic or myth?
Myth. Because I've gone to bed angry a couple times. Is it the right thing to do? Probably not, because you never know what tomorrow may bring and all that kind of stuff, whatever. But, I mean, I feel like it's natural for you to go to bed angry because sometimes you just don't want to F with the person that you with. Like, sometimes you just don't want to, you just don't want to bang with them. Y'all just not in that space. Mm-hmm. And I feel like to say, okay, don't go to bed angry, and then try to make up with the person just to go to bed. You're still angry, right? But you're just going to bed like, oh, well, I made up with him. You know, I still don't really bang with him like that, but whatever. I just don't want to go to bed angry because my grandma said that's not what you're supposed to do. That's a myth because that's just not, it's not, that's not my truth. Mm-hmm. It's not real for me. Sometimes I do go to bed angry. Sometimes he goes to bed angry. And that's okay. But I feel like if we know that we need to work on an issue, then we need to just work on the issue. And it doesn't mean that we're not going to go to bed angry. It just means that we are acknowledging that there's a problem. And we're going to work together to fix it. And it's not going to be an overnight thing. It's not. This is not TV. It's not like, you know, an hour show. And then by the end of the show, you're all made up and it's kumbaya. We're not doing that. Sometimes some things do take time, and sometimes you do go to bed angry because it's natural, but you have to just continue to work through it and save your marriage. And I think that's what marriage is, because so many things happen. I mean, people can sit here and tell you that they have, you know, they don't argue, they always smile, it's always butterflies and rainbows. Or you can look at their Instagram posts or whatever and think that it's always butterflies and rainbows. But whatever. And maybe it is. I'm not no hater. Whatever. I'm just saying, for me, I feel like sometimes things do get ugly. And when it gets ugly, you have to be willing to talk about it, discuss it, and work through it. It might not take a day. It might not take a week. It might take a month. But just make sure that you work through it and utilize all your resources if it gets to the point where, you know, it's kind of unbearable or whatever. Just make sure that you seek whatever help that you need to get through that issue.
Magic or myth? Couples therapy.
It's so funny you mentioned that because we had this conversation years ago when I was talking about therapy just for myself, and I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I don't want to talk to people. Like, that's not my thing, whatever. But it's not a myth. It's magic. Because this is what people are, like, have this profession for, right? So if you go to couples therapy, it's good to have an outsider on the outside looking in and listen to your problems, because oftentimes we do talk to our friends and we talk to our parents and we, you know, talk to people who actually know us and love us. And a lot of times people kind of coddle our feelings. Mm. So if I talk to my mom or if I talk to my dad or, you know, my sister friends or whatever, I have a lot of people in my life who will tell me exactly what's wrong with me and, like, you know, tell me like it is and give me the tough love and stuff. But I feel like when you go to couples therapy, the person, since they're not, like, in,
they're not invested.
Mm-hmm. They can really call a thing a thing, like Iyala says, and tell you exactly what the issue is, and they can really check you. So I feel like a lot of couples do need that checking sometimes.
What advice would you give to single women who desire to be married? Because not all single women desire to be married.
Mm-hmm. I would say don't settle. Because I know that that's, like, kind of a thing now. I feel like a lot of women settle because we are always thinking about, like, our biological clock and, you know, different things. And we're like, okay, well, we're this age. We have to just get married and get it done with. But I would say don't settle. I would say that the man or woman that you desire is out there for you. And that you will find that person, whether it's going to be today or tomorrow, I don't know. But I think that you shouldn't give up hope and think that you're any less than a woman because you haven't found that person yet.
If there's a wife listening who would like to learn more about Wife Diaries, or join the private Facebook group, or attend the local events, because I know you all have local in-person events. Mm-hmm. How should she go about doing so?
Oh, my personal Instagram is just Shanae. So that's JustShanae. And the Wife Diaries Instagram page is Wife Diaries Official. So that's WIFEDIARIES Official. Once you go onto those pages, you can click on the links and you can find the links to our website, which is wifediaries.com. Find the links to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/wifediaries. And also you'll find the links to the private group as well.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Shanae, thank you so much. And best of luck to you on Wife Diaries. You know that you have the support of the Wine and Cheese Tribe. And we look forward to partnering with you.
Oh, thank you.
Ladies, it is my hope that you were informed and inspired by that last conversation. And until we speak again, feel free to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at For Every Wine. That's FOREVERYWHINE. And if you're ready to join us by starting or joining a local branch of Wine and Cheese, where you are welcomed in a safe space with like-minded women to whine about the stress of your life, yet cheese or smile about your blessings, feel free to visit our website, foreverywine.org. Click on the Join Us tab, and we can get you started within a local branch. Until next time. Remember, for every wine, there is a cheese.